My guest today is Larry Cordell, the Mighty Cord. A new album, Where the Trees Know My Name. I love that song. We're going to talk about the entire album. We're going to start off the program with these are choices that Larry pulled from the new album. The very first one you're going to hear is The Devil in Shade Wallen, which is a little spooky, a little creepy. Larry will tell you all about it in the next hour. Thanks so much for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass, and thank you, the Mighty Cord, Larry Cordell. To the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a new single, Devil in Shade Wallen, from my guest today. I haven't had Larry on for a while, and I don't know why, but I want to welcome Larry Cordell to Unreal Bluegrass. How are you doing, Larry?
I'm doing great, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Well, the new album, Where the Trees Know My Name, it's on Mighty Cord. I assume that's your label.
That's my own little record.
Your own little record.
Last 20 years, maybe.
That's a good one. That's a good one. There's so many great songs on here. I asked you before we got started to pick out a few and just give us that'll give us a flavor of the album. And one of the ones that I've been listening to this album a lot, and you mentioned right away The Devil and Shade Wallen. And I want to talk about that song. I want to talk about the album. I want to talk about how you chose some of these songs. And don't let me forget to talk about the people playing music with you on here also, because I want to make sure they get credit.
Okay. Well, now, the Devil and Shade Wallen thing is a story that my grandmother told me when I was a little boy for the truth. People had a way of, in Appalachia, I'm sure you know this,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes when somebody was dying or close to death, people would gather at their home.
Larry, I did it a couple times.
Well, I guess this fella, the Shade Wallen guy, they knew a guy named Shade. I made the song about him, but that wasn't who really that she told me about, although mm-hmm. he was a character that was there. This guy, I guess, evidently they were my grandparents and all my family were very religious, and I guess that kind of a ne'er-do-well and just a kind of a guy that nobody really liked a whole lot because he was just so overbearing and bad to drink and all this stuff, but evidently he had gotten sick, and his wife and some of the neighbors had told him that, he should be thinking about his soul. So my grandmother says they'd sent a preacher there and had run him off. This guy had told him he didn't want him praying for him and all this stuff. But anyway, the night he died, she said that it was so cold that you could hear the timber just cracking in the woods like I've heard. And she said, at midnight, the way they would tell the tales. She said, now, honey, at the dead stroke of midnight, she said, we heard all the frogs holler. She said, it sounded just like it was springtime in these hills. And she said, it was below zero, is what she put it.
Oh, wow.
And then she said, the frogs all started hollering. She said, they had four or five horses tied up out there. The neighbors had to come in. They come in on horseback. She said, somehow the horses got loose and run away. She said, even his old dog tore out from that porch. And she said, the devil come and got him right then when he took his last breath. I had forgotten about it. And my mom, a couple of years before she passed, she asked me if I remembered the story. And I said, yeah. So I went and asked my uncle, who by that time was in his 80s, and he had told it to me again, and it was verbatim like Mama had told me because he was with him.
Mm.
He was in the 30s, so he would have been just a young boy at that time. And he told me, he said, oh yeah, he said that word, that's true. So I thought, I'd forgotten about the thing.
Oh, that's a great story.
And Larry Shell, my old longtime co-writer, and I've written so many things with, reminded me of it two or three years ago. He said, man, is there any way we can make something out of that story you told me about that Shade Wallen guy? And I said, yeah, maybe, I don't know. I said, listen. And so we got to fiddle with it one day, and I tried to make it as much about how she told it to me as I possibly could.
I may have cut you off just a little bit. You were going to describe, and I think that I've had this experience, not with Shade Wallen or not the Midnight and the all the different parts to it, but you were describing what I remember several times. You were talking about someone was sick or thought to be going to die, and I cut you off, but I think you were going to say then the family would just sort of come around and wait.
They did.
Yeah.
And the
bring food.
Neighbors would come in, and yeah. what they actually had hoped for, and this is what my grandmother told me, I get so scattered telling the story. She said, you know, they were hoping till he took his last breath that he would just confess that he was a sinner and, you know, ask the Lord for forgiveness. But she said, you know, honey, she said he never did. She said he left right out of here and never one time. She said, you know, something startled him, and he had not opened his eyes forever. She said, just before midnight, his eyes flew open, and he tried to holler or something, but she said, no, it never made no sense to nobody.
Yeah.
And in just a few minutes, he died. So, I don't know. If you could have heard them tell it, I hope that... it's not funny, but... I hope I got enough of it in that song so people can see it like she can make me see it.
Oh yeah, it sounds.
Me and my brother, our eyes would be a big saucer, you know, sitting there listening to that. We'd go.
you make it sound very real, and it's a great song. And I'm talking to Larry Cordell about the new album. Where the Trees Know My Name. And Larry, there's so many great songs, and we just sampled one just then, played that for the audience. We'll get back to a few others before we're done here, but you and I talked the other day in getting ready for this about the timing of this album and the fact that, I guess, as we sit here today, Larry, in this time of February, we're not too far away from the anniversary of when everything shut down. We were talking about that just a little bit yesterday.
Yeah, I worked in 2020. I worked every weekend in February, and then it was just over. You know, I had been working 2 nights a week in Nashville at the station inn for many years.
Right,
and that ended. All the shows, people held on to shows as long as they could. But every one of them canceled out except for maybe one, I think. And I actually wound up canceling it because I was afraid to go, you know, with my underlying things where I had this leukemia and stuff.
Yeah.
I was kind of afraid to. My doctors at least say, hey, you know, you don't want to get this because if you do it, it can be pretty tough on you. So I wound up working one other show in September. And that was it. So that's the reason the album didn't come out. There was, plus, you know, Steve, kind of now, the way things are now, it's almost like it was when I was a kid in the 1960s. It's kind of a singles world out here.
It's been happening for a while, and I think, Larry, what you're talking about with the COVID, the releases are now more and more becoming singles off of an album. When you're talking about, like you used to get a 45 at the drugstore or something.
Yeah, you know, we don't have 45s anymore.
No.
But I know I talk to a lot of people, a lot of other bands and band leaders and stuff, and I didn't realize this until about 2018. You know, and they're like, well, you know, we're not making a whole album until we're going to put out 3 or 4 songs and see how they do. Well, that's kind of what I did with this album.
Okay.
I put the first single out before I even had the album done, which was maybe in 2019.
Which was the first one to the audience?
It was Breaking Under Jimmy Reed.
Okay.
Well, that was the first single. And then the next single was Sailor's Regret. And the single after that was Cherokee Fiddle. All those were number one records. So since I didn't have any way of marketing the record, you know, musicians, I don't know how many people know this, but we don't have, especially bluegrass musicians, we don't have big distributors and stuff like we used to. You just can't make any money off the record.
Right.
You know, if you get somebody to put a record in Walmart, if you make $5 on it, then you're really... Well, at that point, at that dollar figure, it's not even worth making the record.
Right.
So I just kind of quit doing that. Whatever year I put All-Star Duets out, I did have some distribution for that. But after that one, I just saw that, you know, the most records we're going to sell are at live shows.
Exactly. And then when that shuts
down,
yeah.
You might as well own it.
Yeah, you, that way it's all, when you sell it there at the site of a show, that's yours.
It's the good news, the bad news. The good news is you get to keep the money. The bad news is you have to put the money up to make the record.
That's right.
So, but, you know, I've done it so long now that I've built up a pretty good little catalog of things I own. I think I own everything now back to Murder on Music Row, except for that Lynyrd Skynyrd album I did for CMH about, I don't know, 2006 or 7, yeah. Somewhere around in there.
Yeah. I think the All-Star Duets was the last time you and I talked.
It may have been.
I think it was. When you
fast.
Yeah. The name of the album, you picked a song for the name of the album, the older song, Where the Trees Know My Name, and that song to me and your take on it, maybe that's just the time that we're living in now, but that just really strikes me, because all the trees that knew my name when I was a kid, I'm not trying to make this all personal, they're all gone now.
It's the same for me. Yeah. You know, and I may have even said something about that in the liner notes. You know, I mean, we used to, seriously, we practically lived in the woods. I mean,
I agree. That's exactly what we did.
We lived on a farm, you know, and I mean, that was where our fun was that. It was out in the woods or outside. I mean, we didn't do things inside like kids do now. We rain or shine or snow or sunshine, we was out all week to be out. We had a basketball goal, I remember, in our barn loft.
Anywhere you could nail one.
Nail one up. You know.
That's
we
funny.
Had a pole and had a backboard on it and a ball goal on it that Dad put up for me and my brother. And when it'd get too muddy to play there, we'd go to the barn loft, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we wasn't doing that, I'm serious. We was in the woods. And we'd carved our initials in, Lord knows how many of them old trees, you know. But they're all gone.
Yeah.
They're every one gone.
Tree houses. We used to build tree houses every other year.
Oh, yeah.
Hang around in those and sleep and go fishing the next day is what we did.
Absolutely. And that song, I wrote that song with Leslie Satcher about, it's not that old, actually. I wrote it three or four years ago, maybe 3 years ago. Leslie had that idea. She's from East Texas. And I put as much about that East Kentucky stuff in it as I could. And her upbringing must have been similar, because she sure had a lot to do with the song, too. So we found a lot of common ground, I guess you could say, to come up with that lyric.
It's a great one. It's a great
one. I'm glad you like that, Steve. I like that. I almost put it out instead of the Shade Wallen thing, but I wanted people to hear Mamaw's old title.
That's a great story. I've played the title cut on Unreal Bluegrass several times. I mean, I play it whenever I just got thinking about that stuff, and so they've heard it.
Thank you, because, you know, I mean, I've tried my very best, and maybe it's a fault of mine, but I've tried my very best to, in song, to kind of catalog my life as much as I could, looking backward on. You know, I realized that the older you get, you're able to see some of the things that you thought were hardships for the learning experience they really were, and how much it shaped who you are. As time went by. So I've tried my best to catalog a lot of that East Kentucky stuff, and I love writing about it, because I find out when I get in that mood that I'm able to recall a lot more things than you'd ever. I thank God for it, you know, that I can remember these things to write down about them, because once I'm gone, once my generation is gone, that kind of leaves me, I think.
I think you're right, Larry. I think you're right. There's so many great songs on here. We're going to talk about a couple more, but The Farmer, we were talking about that way of life. The song on here, The Farmer, is just, that's got to be from experience.
Yeah, I wrote it with Galen Griffin, a great country songwriter here, great singer, and Buddy Owens, who's had hit after hit. They both had farm backgrounds, and I got the song idea from Paul Harvey's great, I don't know if you ever saw that thing of his or not, but they ran it on Super Bowl 46 or 47.
Yes.
Have you ever heard Paul's thing?
Oh, yeah, sure.
On the eighth day, God made the farmer.
Yes, sir.
I'm just talking to you about it. I can look down my hair stand if I'm. I'd had that in my back pocket ever since then. I thought, well, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do to go behind a great Paul Harvey here and try to. But I used my grandpa's chordal. That was my pattern. Now, I know the other two writers had people that influenced them the same way, and they were trying to get as much of them in the song. But that's who my pattern was for that. He was a, me and Houston could do anything. and he did do anything. He done anything he could, but his main gig was he was a farmer. He had 50 acres or 60, whatever that old farm was. And, you know, I used to love talking to him. I wish to God now I would have done even more than I did, because who knows what I could have really got out of there. But I used to love to talk to him about things like the Depression, because he told me, you know, everybody that was a generation or two beyond me, they all lived through the Depression.
Yeah.
So I asked him, I said, well, what was that? You know, I mean, how was that for you guys? And he said, well, it was not a lot different. He said, the only way we were going to eat here is if we brought it out of the ground or we raised it. He said, but we always had plenty. Now, it's just the way he would put it. And he got up until he was in his stroke when he was 85, and he was still working every single day doing something.
And every day it was there waiting for him.
Every day. And he, you know, in a farmer's life, if I've thought about this so many times, it's never, tomorrow now, I'm not going to, if he couldn't work out in his fields, if it was raining, he sharpened his tools. Everything he did, or he'd work on a sled that he'd built, or he, everything they had was some kind of hand tool. And they had he had a plan. He didn't work fast. He had a thing that he did every day. And he, as far as I know, I mean, they never really had anything, but they had plenty to eat. That's how they looked at it. They had a roof over their head, and they had plenty to eat. They didn't have cars. And that's what he told me about the Depression. He said, well, you know, there was ration on gas, but nobody had a car. And he said there was ration on, he said they traded their gas ration for sugar and coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's what he told me. And he said, you know, he would walk to Blaine, which was a couple of miles from where he lived, and just go down there and see if he could find anything to do if he had his work called up at the farm.
Yeah, it was just,
you know, he'd go down there and work all day for 50 cents for somebody if they had something for him to do. So that's who I kind of used for my pattern for that part of the song.
Yeah, well,
it's not just Papa, though. I mean, they was.
All of them.
Every man in that country was that way.
Yep. Yeah. That's what it was. It was the everyday. And you get
7 days a week. I mean, you know, cows had to be milked,
yep,
and your stock fed, and all that stuff twice a day. If you didn't have one thing to do in the field, so you were tied to the land. But boy, they loved it. You know, I mean, he had a team of mules. He done everything was done by hand. Everything, all his life. I remember. The first guy to cut his hay over there with a tractor was a neighbor there that he told him Papa was real way up in years, you know, and he told him, son of a mule, I can cut that. It'd take him a day or two to cut it. He said, well, I can cut that in 2 hours, you know. But, you know, he let him cut it, but it never suited him.
Yeah.
He told me once I was over there and they cut it. He said, they left more on the ground than they cut.
That's a great story. It's a great song. Talking to Larry Cordell, if you're just tuned in to Unreal Bluegrass, and the latest album is kind of what we're talking. We're talking all around it, and we're talking about it. The album being Where the Trees Know My Name. Larry just gave you a little rundown on The Farmer. There's another song on here, and this might lead into the second song that we play. Is taking that country boy and putting him out on the ocean.
Oh yeah, Sailor's Regret. Well, yeah. Now, you know, I got that song from Johnny Williams. A lot of you probably know Johnny. He's from over in Virginia. One of the more underrated writers that I know of. Just a great songwriter. And I needed something that had that real bluegrass drivey thing. I didn't really have anything in my back pocket that way this time. And I called John. And actually, I called Jody King, my banjo player, and asked him if he knew, if he'd kind of check around on him. So he sent me a handful of songs. He sent me 7 or 8 songs. And that one stood out from every other one that he sent me. And when I looked at it, I saw it was Johnny. So I called Johnny and asked him if it'd be all right if I recorded it. And he said, yeah. Johnny wrote some great songs. He's just a really great Johnny and Jeanette Williams are great artists, too.
Yeah.
His wife. You know, I love his writing. I love his gospel songs. I mean, he's got some powerful gospel tunes that I hope to record one of these days.
There are, Larry, there's so many great tempos and so many different types of songs on here. That's one of the more up-tempo.
It is. And I needed that. You know, I didn't quite. Sometimes I've got one of them, but it's usually not my first nature. So, thankfully, I knew somebody that had it. I love that song. I love I was in the Navy, too, and I could relate to a lot of the stuff, that Johnny had in that song. So, yeah, it worked out good for me.
Well, that's a great introduction. I'm gonna take a minute here. We're going to play Larry Cordell. He was just giving you a good description of Sailor's Regret, which is a song off of his latest album, Where the Trees Know My Name, and that's on the Mighty Chord label. Let's play that, and I'll come back and talk to Larry a little bit more, then I'll let him go so I don't worry him out. So now we're going to hear Sailor's Regret, as Larry just gave a great intro. So hold on, we'll be right back. Well, there it was, Sailor's Regret, Larry. That's a great song. I love so many of these songs. You mix in tempo and stories, and you have ballad-type events. You have Sleepy Time. It's just a whole different kind of a song on this album. It's distinct into itself. Very pretty song.
Well, you know, I'd written it almost 30 years ago when my daughter was a baby. And I used to sing it to her all the time. And I have a new granddaughter. She's 20 months old now. And I didn't want to. I never recorded it when Kelby was little. I started to a time or two, and she kind of got older, and I just didn't. And so when the baby came along, I thought, well, you know, I'm not going to let this opportunity pass me again. So I kind of recorded it in her honor and put it on here. So once I'm off the planet, maybe this will be something they can pull out for their kids, you know. I hope so.
Well, you described it so well. That's exactly what it is. It's you know, it's something.
It's just a little child's lullaby.
Exactly right.
I wrote for my daughter, and it was I sang it for her and all of her cousins and nieces and nephews, and every time we had a new birth in the family, you know, somebody would want me to sing it to the kids, you know. And I noticed that I could take a guitar out and sing it for them, and it would just mesmerize these kids. They would just sit there paralyzed listening to it, you know. So I probably should have recorded it a long time ago, but the Lord has plans for things on His own time, so I'm sure this was the right time.
I'm glad you did it. Now, let's do this then. Let's talk about two totally different type of remembrances. I'll put it that way. First, I want you to hit on the natural a little bit. The natural state, I should say. I couldn't read my handwriting. Natural state, and then I want to talk a little bit about the cowboy and the last red man.
Yeah, I wrote the Natural State song with Larry Schell and Trey Hensley. Great guitar player, and I'm sure you all are aware.
Oh,
of
yeah.
Larry and I had been writing with Trey off and on the last 4 or 5 years. You know, when Larry's in town, we'll always try to get a day with Trey, and that was something that Larry had an idea for, Larry Schell, and we'd gotten, like I said, a day or two maybe with Trey, and we put that little country boy, country girl love story together. I thought about that swimming thing, because, you know, boys used to, we'd go to the creek and we'd just chuck our clothes. We'd run right and jump in the creek, you know, and I don't know that I was ever... A couple times right after I got older, maybe I was around girls who didn't have no clothes on in the creek.
Is Amy in the song a fictional that you would have wanted to run into?
Yes, Amy's fictional. Okay. I didn't actually run into her. Okay. But, I thought it made a good tale like that. I had been told that a time or two that. You know, there used to be this one big swimming hole you all used to go to, and there were some girls lived out there on Dry Ridge. And these boys that lived down in there was all the time telling me, man, you all got to come out here. So, you know, these gals show up down here every once in a while. My mama said, you ain't going out there nowhere, nothing like that's going on. So I was a nearly grown man by that time, but that's just the way they thought about things. So I like that song a lot.
I do too. It's
somebody called me today. Who was that? Somebody, some other radio person I was talking to today said they'd been playing that. Said they hoped I didn't mind, and I said, well, I don't mind. I would rather people would play the single, but hey, I'm tickled with. I'm glad people are playing it. If they like it, that's great.
It's a great lighthearted song. Could very well be real for just about a whole bunch of people out there listening. And then this song too, The Cowboy and the Last Red Man. That's always going to be a relevant story, I think. Am I reading too much into that?
My old friend that I wrote a lot of songs with too, Jim Rushing. Perhaps one of the greatest songwriters I've ever been in contact with. He wrote that big thing. He wrote Thanks Again. He wrote Cajun Moon. He wrote Rhonda's big thing. What's that called? The railroad song. Lickety clack, eating up the track. Can't you hear that whistle scream?
I know what you're talking about. I'll come to the title of it too at some point.
Passing of the Train.
Yeah, that's a great song. I play that more than I should because it's kind of old for her.
Got the greatest first verse I ever read in my life. Way back when it all began, with muscle, wood, and steel, the mind of man tamed the land with a horse that rode on wheels. It broke the heart of the red man and made a name for Jesse James. Mark was left forever by the passing of the train.
Yeah.
I can't even quote it without the hair standing up on me. I mean, it's just brilliant writing to me. And he had that in him. Well, I knew this Jim and Carl Jackson and that man myself. I had this publishing deal one time back in the early 90s. We had formed this little company with these other people. And Jim had written that song along about that period with Leslie Satcher. We'd all become aware of Leslie and what a great writer she was. And they'd called me. We had some office buildings down there, a place called Cummins Station. And I'd just passed their office door down there one day going to mine. And he said, come in here a minute. And they'd played me that song. And I tried to figure out a way to do that thing. Every record would come by, I would think, man, I need to do this Cowboy and the Last Red Man song. And I just kept putting it off. But Jim had moved back here from Montana about the time I was starting working on this record. He made me think of it again. So I said, man, send me that thing and let me listen to it. And sure enough, when it come by here, I thought, man, I ain't letting that go by again. I'm gone. Jim's grandfather is in the New Mexico Cowboy Hall of Fame.
Wow.
So he knows a lot about what he's talking about. And I don't know if there was actually the red man that was in the, I never have asked him about that, whether they were friends or not, but they must have known somebody that was to have come up with that kind of tale. And I can't hardly sing it either. When I get to that second verse part, that my granddad's saddle rest on a saddle, on a rafter in the barn, along with his chaps and spurs, and Jack's upon the mesa, asleep at holy ground, next to that old painting in life he dearly loved. Just there's something about the scene of that that I can't hardly get out of my mind. It just, I don't know. There's a sadness in it that I can't hardly describe for me, although I never really knew anyone like that myself. I knew when they played it for me the very first time, when they had just written it, that it made a great big impression on me. So I'm not surprised that somebody finds that on the album. And,
well, I'm glad you finally recorded it so we could all listen to it.
Yeah, he just written so many great songs. I wrote a lot of songs with Jim over the years. You know, I wrote Heartbreak Hurricane with him, and I wrote Lonesome Standard Time with him. I wrote Kentucky Thunder with him. Just a lot of songs. We all used to work for the same publishing company. You know, we worked for Ricky. When I first came to town, we all worked for Ricky's publishing company, who was attached to Lawrence Welk. Publishing company. So that's how I kind of got to know all these characters.
Okay.
And it's, you know, what a time that was. It was kind of the tail end of the whole Nashville, that whole songwritery thing, you know, that was really so prevalent in the 60s, 70s, 80s, right in there. I kind of just barely got in on the tail end of that and got to know some of these characters, and it's, it's just amazing how brilliant some of these people are. You would never know it to talk to them sometimes because they kind of push that aside, you know. They're just so brilliant.
Larry, if you just tuned in, I'm still talking to Larry Cordell, which I enjoy this so much. There's so many stories and things that we can throw into this album. We've covered a lot of, touched on many of the points of the latest album, Where the Trees Know My Name. You've done some wonderful. I told you this in the beginning, I don't want to forget who's playing with you on this album. Don't let me forget the major players that you can pull up.
Some of the players are just my band. Would have been Jody King, played the 5-string banjo. Chris Davis was now the lead singer for the Grascals and guitar player, but he was a great mandolin player and a great singer. Chris played with us off and on for 10, 12 years, you know, was just one of my favorite people. Chris played mandolin on some of this stuff and sang on some of it. Kim Gardner was the dobro player on some things, like he played on Breaking Under Jimmy Ridge. He played on, I don't know, you'd really have to just look at the back of the record, because, and Mike Anglin played the bass. And then the other guys that I used from in town, just the session players, were guys like Clay Hess played guitar on virtually everything.
Mm-hmm.
Although Cody Kilby played on 4 or 5 things now that I think of it.
Scott Bethel
played banjo on some of it.
Okay.
The fiddles were all either Aubrey Haney or Janae Fleener. Janae was old Lonesome. She works in Blake Shelton now. She was in Lonesome Standard Time in 2001, 2003, right around in there. And Aubrey works with us is phenomenal, as everyone knows. As is Janae, who is, by the way, the Country Music Association.
Yeah, she was
the year again.
Yeah, you keep good company, Larry. All those names.
Yeah, Rob Ax played on some things, and Casey Campbell. I have these people, you know, Mike Bubb played bass on some things. I have these people that I've known in Casey's case, all of his life. But, you know, I've known some of these people for 30 years or longer, and thank God I'm able to call them when I've got these things going on and say, guys, the work they did was just made my job easy. They know how to interpret these things that I, you know, sometimes I can't I can't quite get to what I want, but I can always call these guys and they can lie there. They can lay it on me every time.
So. Well, this is. I just wanted to get as many names in there on the air as we could, and you've done a good job. That's good.
I hope I didn't leave anybody out. And of course, I got the singers too. Was just great. I used Don Rigsby on three or four things. I used Carl Jackson and Val Story on. I know I used them on Cherokee Fiddle and Cowboy and the Last Red Man, and I used Jerry Sally on a thing or two, Natural State, and you know, these people all been friends of mine the same way for 30 years or longer.
Those are high weeds there, Larry.
Yeah, I've been fortunate, Steve. I thank God Almighty for what I do. I've been fortunate to know these brilliant people, and they've never let me down. Used to, we just made records all the time with our own bands, but that's not hardly as easy to do anymore with everybody living so far apart. You know, bluegrass bands used to, they lived together. They just lived around one another, you know, and I haven't had that luxury in a long time anymore.
They live near each other and they live in a car.
They lived in a car,
yeah.
And they played every night. People wonder how these guys were so great. Flatten Scruggs and Sonny Bobby and any of those guys, they played every day.
They played all the time. And when they got...
They never quit playing.
And when
they might have sat down for Sunday dinner.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, but they played every single day. I mean, we can't play that way anymore because there's not outlets to do that anymore.
And when they got to the studio, Larry, they knew time was precious. Different recording process then. They got to the studio and they hit it and they nailed it and they were done because they couldn't stay there for days and remix.
No, they really simply couldn't. And they had these arrangements down before they ever. You know, we made a couple of records that way back there. Me and Glenn Duncan made those records in a day or two that we made for Sugar Hill. And I know Murder on Music Row, we recorded the whole thing in 2 days.
Hmm.
I went in and did some vocal overdubs, but really the lion's share of that stuff was done right then. You know, I mean, it was just, we all got in the room together. That was when I recorded that in 1999, maybe. But it's far different now than it was then.
Oh, yeah.
The chances of doing that are not. Although, I tell you, on this album, the overdubs were pretty limited. Because I got as many of them in there as I could. And we cut a lot of that stuff right then. Right then. Sometimes the first thing that comes by these brilliant musicians, that's the best. I mean, you get to listen to it, it's like, well, I don't know. What are you going to do about
that? We're going to make it better. Yeah.
So a lot of that stuff was, you know, I mean, I had to overdub some things because I couldn't get everybody there on the same day or something. But a lot of that stuff was done by and large on the fly.
Larry, I've always enjoyed chatting with you. And this new record, Where the Trees Know My Name, I'll say it again, it's on the Mighty Chord label, which is your label. And you mentioned in our discussion, just in kind of going back and forth, a song that I want you to introduce. We've talked about the album and the feel for it. I want you to introduce this song, and then I'm going to let you go because I know you're busy. You got things to do. I appreciate every minute of your time. But I want you to do a little bit of a lead-in to Breaking on Jimmy Ridge.
Yeah, let me say this before we get to that, Steve.
Yeah, sure.
My website is just LarryCordle.com.
Oh, thanks.
My Facebook page is Facebook.com/LarryCordleFans. This record is available at CD Baby, Amazon, all those usual places for download or physical. And, you know, I don't know if you're going to be able to find it in stores, but you can always get to my Facebook page or my website or any of that, and you can order it directly from me.
Good, thanks. That would be my last question, but now you've done that. So now you can just introduce Breaking on Jimmy Ridge. This is a great story.
Well, I appreciate it, Steve. There actually is a Jimmy Ridge, and as I told you last time we talked, a lot of times when storm systems would come from that way, my grandfather had an old country store, one of them did, and these old farmers would gather around there, you know, it'd be dry, and they'd say, well, didn't see all these big clouds coming, you know, and they'd say, well, we may get some rain today if it don't break back there on the Jimmy Ridge. And what would happen is when these storm systems would come around kind of from the northwest, if they held together till they got across that ridge line, you're probably going to get some rain. But the, and there was probably a scientific reason of some sort for it. I don't know, but, you know, you see these things all the time where there's bodies of water or big ridge lines and stuff that these formations don't hold together. There's some sort of scientific reason for it. But they only knew what they saw. They had seen this happen so many times that they would say, yeah, well, we'll get some rain if it don't break back down on the Jim Ridge. And they had all kinds of other things that I'm sure you've heard. They'd say, well, it's going to be wet. You know, we heard a tree frog yesterday, you know. So I tried to get all that stuff in this song. And then for the end of it, you know, where I just took the modern-day thing. You know, you turn on the news, and they've got all these radars, and they show you all this stuff. But they can't always hit it.
Mm-mm.
They'll say, hey, man, it's going to be, it's going to, at least here, they'll say, hey, it's going to pour the rain tomorrow, you know. And then the next night you're watching them and say, well, you know, it changed overnight.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, for all their tools they've got and all this stuff.
Is it really that much better? That's where you're headed, right?
Yeah, because these guys just looked out. I mean, farmers had to. They just looked out and they said, oh, man. I mean, they would watch or listen to the weather on the radio and stuff, but they looked around for the signs, the natural signs that they saw. And, boy, I'm telling you what, they were on the money as much as any of these guys on with all this modern stuff.
Yep. I think you're right. I think you're right. We lost all that somewhere along the way.
We were talking about it, me and Larry Shell, and we wrote this song with it. You know, it was something I wanted to do. It's another one of them little things that I got out of East Kentucky that I just tried to keep alive some way, just so people maybe could understand how simple that life was compared to how complex it is now. You know, somebody walks out and says, oh, man, we're going to get rained on.
Too often now, we're more concerned about whether we need an umbrella when we leave the door. You know, it's okay to get rained on a little bit. And that's why we need an umbrella or not. These guys that were looking at Jimmy Ridge were wanting to know if they should cut or whether they should plow or what they should do for that day.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, whether they should, like I said, my other grandfather did. If he couldn't work the field, he'd sharpen tools. So.
Yeah. That's right.
If it's going to get rained on, they had something they could do.
They weren't on the internet.
Not on the internet. They're not surfing.
Larry, it's always a pleasure. I love speaking with you about this stuff. We could just go on and on. And great new album.
Yeah, I love talking about it. And I really appreciate what you do, Steve.
Well, thanks.
And you guys out there that do this for us. We couldn't do this without you people. And it means a lot to me. I don't say that lightly. I mean, it means a lot to me because I know you guys work hard. So,
well, we'll.
And I know you got other jobs, so it means a lot to me.
Well, I hope that we'll all get free to move around soon, and I'll get to run up on you somewhere live. We'll all be safe. We'll all get our shots, and everything will be working, and we'll get back to doing what we want to do and see it in person and hear it and play it and have a good time.
Yeah, I've got half a dozen things booked this year, so I'm hoping we'll get some more stuff and we're able to get back out there and work.
Yeah, all right. Well, I'm gonna say goodbye to Larry Cordell. Thanks again, Larry. We're going to play as we leave out of here, Breaking on the Jimmy Ridge, and a great album, Where the Trees Know My Name. Thanks, Larry. I appreciate you so much, man.
Thank you, Steve.
Bye-bye.